All right, good morning, everybody. It is October 9th, 2018. This is a work session. This is phase two, or our second meeting of our overall budget priorities work session. And without further ado, we'll just jump right back in.
Good morning. Good morning, Mayor, Council. For the record, my name is Tom Reinhart, Chief Administrative Officer for the city. We are excited to be with you 2 weeks in a row to discuss your budget priorities, and I'm grateful for the colleagues here at the table and the many people that have been working with us on this effort. Last week, we began the discussion of your budget priorities grounded in what has happened with the city's finances over the past several years, namely unprecedented revenue growth, significant increases in personnel costs, investments in critical infrastructure needs like roads, parks, and civic assets, and finally, creation of new services in response to the homelessness and housing crises. As we move forward together, the mayor has asked us to work collaboratively on an approach that helps the council identify priorities earlier in the year. Over the next several years, we hope this effort brings more consistency, predictability, and transparency. Pardon me, I missed that slide. In order to more effectively serve all Portlanders. Just so we're prepared for what is ahead today, we have three goals for our time together. First, we will continue the discussion about your priorities, guided by what we know about our current economic conditions, which is why our esteemed city economist is here. As the mayor said a couple times last week, the more we are clear about priorities and outcomes, the easier it will be to create a predictable, stable system with a long-term approach for achieving council's goals for the city. Second, in response to the conversation and questions last week, CBO leadership will outline the directives to develop approach for budget requests this year. And third, Sukri, Director of the Office of Community and Civic Life, will present her team's ideas for beginning to shift the way we engage the community regarding the budget. So let's jump in. I'm going to turn it over to Josh to do the current economic conditions.
All right, thanks. All right, thanks, Tom. Again, for the record, Josh Harwood, city economist. I will be brief. You'll hear plenty from me next month when we do a formal budget retreat, and then the forecast will come out in December. As we move to just sort of set the scene for the next 6 months or so and where we are right now, assuming we make it to next June, we'll have the longest economic expansion since World War II. So I imagine we'll get there without a recession. And so we've got down 96, actually, consecutive months of job growth, also a record. The way to think about our local economy in general, and this is true in this expansion and in others, is that we do better than the nation in good times, and we do worse in bad times. So we're a little more volatile than the nation as a whole, as an economic entity. We have the lowest unemployment rate on record right now, recorded. What? 3.8%. And so it is. It fluctuates around 3.5, between 3.5 and 4 for about the last year. We do expect the construction sector, for a variety of reasons, to slow over the next year. The conditions for lending, as well as interest rates and a variety of construction-related costs have exceeded the ability to make money in some of these projects. So I would expect to see that slow down a little bit over the next 12 months. As we move to the next slide, a little bit of a look at what a revenue picture looks like. So this is a very simplistic view of where we are relative to our long-run trend. And essentially, we, as Tom mentioned, our record revenue growth has pushed us well above our long-term trend, about $40 million above our long-term trend. So even a small slowdown could yield some rather large deficit numbers, especially considering that our volatile revenue sources, business license taxes and transient lodging taxes, now make up just about a third of our total general fund revenue picture. As comparison, going into the last recession, it made up about a quarter. So we're more dependent on our volatile revenue sources. That means that even a more modest slowdown could yield similar budget constraints. And finally, just a little bit sort of at the broad outlook, I think the consensus is that we are, the economy should keep growing for the next 12 months or so at least. We're decent at predicting the next 12 to 18 months. It gets harder when it gets further out for a variety of reasons. But the tax cut stimulus at the federal level has really created a bit of a monkey wrench in a lot of forecasting as on both sort of a macroeconomic scale, but also as it relates to our local revenue sources. And there's a couple of reasons for that. Business license taxes are sort of, I don't want to minimize this, they're sort of an afterthought for large corporations, our business license taxes. It's a very small proportion of what their overall tax liability is. So when the federal law changes occur, it can yield behavioral changes for our highest-end taxpayers in those in that particular revenue stream. And what this particular tax cut did is it provided incentive for companies to essentially pay their taxes early to other non-federal entities because they could deduct it on the higher federal tax rates before the lower tax rates went into effect. What that does is and we don't know the magnitude of this yet. I'm working with my counterparts at the county. We're trying to get a sense of what the magnitude is. But qualitatively, it means that some revenue that we would have seen this year actually came in last year. And so that's something we're going to be working through over the next few months to try to gauge sort of the magnitude of it. The other thing that's happening locally within blocks of here, in fact, is the massive increase in hotel construction in the central city. About 30% more hotel rooms will come online over a course of a 4 or 5 year period. That supply change will outstrip the demand change. As a result, we expect room rates to fall slightly. And because we apply a rate to the tax, to the room rates, we apply a tax rate to the room rates, the lower room rates would suppress lodging taxes a little bit. And we've already seen that to some extent. Over the last year, we've had a couple quarters that are year over year were actually declines. Very modest ones, but they're actually declines. So those things in combination with a relatively high inflationary environment, which is the other thing we're seeing locally here, will put some budget constraints on us even if we continue our economic growth. And so I'm happy to answer questions. Like I said, we'll be back in front of you a couple times over the next couple months, but I'm happy to answer some questions before we hand it back to Tom.
I had a question on that last comment you made. So in order to accommodate the increasing supply of hotel rooms, people are going to be discounting significantly, and your expectation is even though I guess the question I should be asking is really about demand. Is demand staying relatively stable for hotel rooms, so there's just more hotel rooms and the same level of demand, meaning
broadly
discounting
speaking,
will lead to less revenues? Or
broadly speaking, Mayor, yeah, the growth in supply is outstripping the growth in demand. So demand can grow a little bit, but we're having a massive increase in supply of hotel rooms here. And so I have some contacts to our general managers of hotels locally, and they're anticipating higher competition for those customers, which will require lower room rates.
Very good, thank you.
I think once the convention center hotel comes online, then we will be getting more bigger conventions. And so I think that there's kind of a gap in the interim.
Yeah, Commissioner Fritz, that's absolutely true. I mean, there's a reason they're building all these hotels, right? It's a long play for those companies. It's not a short-term sort of like try to capitalize on something. So the overall sort of trend is still positive. It's just that we're going to have a little bit of an unsteady blip before we get there.
So if hotels are less expensive in Portland, Oregon, and right now they're considered fairly expensive, right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that suggest more people would come here, people who at least at the margin ordinarily wouldn't come here, number one? And number two, if they're paying less on their lodging here, does that suggest maybe they'll have more discretionary cash to invest in other things like restaurants or clothing or other goods they might find here?
Yeah, I think absolutely. Obviously, but I think the data has shown already. We had massive growth in lodging taxes. We're still seeing more customers come through the airport, but we're not seeing the growth in lodging taxes. So,
and then just to state the obvious, we of course don't capture sales tax outside of the lodging.
Right. I would like it just for the data, but that's just me. All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Josh. So before Interim Budget Director Claudio Campuzano goes through some lists from last week and engages you more in the priorities, we wanted to give you a brief overview of what we heard from you last week, broadly speaking. So the priorities that we heard, when we grouped all the different items in the discussion last week, were really in four categories, and they probably won't be surprising to you. Infrastructure, housing investments, homelessness response, and long-term liabilities. These are generally speaking, most of them could fall into these categories.
Okay,
yes, Mr. Mayor.
I don't want public safety or livability to fall off the list.
And you will see that in the upcoming list that Mr. Campuzano will go through.
And you heard from at least two of us that parks are a big priority.
Right. And again, we tried to group them. Parks infrastructure, we're definitely within that first bullet point. So this is not... This
actually, more than infrastructure, it's parks staffing.
We tried to capture was in ongoing attempts to try to get themes from the council, and we can add to this as we go along. But the more that we get on direction and themes, the easier it is for us to collaborate bureau to bureau and come up with proposals for you, Commissioner Fritz and Mr. Mayor. So without any more questions on that?
I just want to comment that I went to the City Club debate on Friday between the two candidates for City Council, and they were asked, given that police, fire, and parks take up the majority of the city, are the biggest general fund bureaus, would you cut any of them? And the answer was no from Commissioner Smith, and I would, Joanne Hardesty said that she would cut police and give to parks. So to the extent that our new colleague is not yet at the table, I just wanted to put that on the record.
Thank you. Claudio.
Great. Thanks, Tom. Josh, morning, Council. I'm Claudio Campuzano, Interim Director for the City Budget Office. I think Tom has done a great job capturing some of the big themes that we heard last week, issues that have become really familiar over the last couple of years. And Josh provided some good context for our capacity to address some of those issues in the coming years. As we start to dive a little deeper into the budget process, sort of connecting those priorities to the new investments that we might want to make, I just wanted to take a moment to provide Council really with a summary of a list of some of the big items that CBO has been tracking, things that we as a city have committed to, aspirations that we've signaled through plans that have been passed by Council, and just other statements of intent to make sure that we're giving giving air to a lot of the issues that have come up over the last year or so. So forgive me if I haven't captured everything or if the things that are here don't yet rise to the level of priority for this discussion. It's really just intended to seed the discussion about which priorities we do want to focus on in the current year and how do we tee ourselves up to address some additional challenges in the years going forward. So we're good here. So starting with the list of ongoing commitments that we've made or signaled explicitly, I want to start with two items from last year's budget. Parks currently receives $2.4 million on an annual basis for major maintenance and replacement of its assets. It is generally understood that this figure is insufficient to maintain the system, and last year Council directed Parks to request an additional $500,000 ongoing each year until such time as they've sort of reached a level of stability. Second is in order to fund the work necessary to comply with the Creek settlement, PBOT was directed to request a current appropriation level target adjustment of $1 million in the fall bump, and they've done that, and Council will have an opportunity to approve that in the coming weeks. At the same time, Council acknowledged the many barriers to accessibility in the parks system and directed Parks to make a similar $1 million CAL adjustment request. Excuse me. Next up, financial policy requires that a funding plan be in place for any new assets that are anticipated in the next to be brought online or to be contracted for in the next fiscal year. So Parks is still in the process of developing their O&M estimate for the work that's in their CIP, but early estimates put it above $700,000 annually. As work on the Portland building and related investments in downtown office space move forward, there are a number of additional costs that need to be incorporated either with new funding from the tenant bureaus or absorbed by those bureaus.
Can I ask you a question just for the parking lot? And at the end, I'll probably give you more, but while it's on my mind. Some of these are going to need to be funded regardless of economic circumstances. Could we start making a parking lot list of commitments that will have to be funded regardless of what the status of our revenue structure is or regardless of what the economy is doing?
Yeah, I think that you're getting.
I'd like to start.
Yeah, you're getting directly to the heart of the goal of developing sort of a citywide financial plan, particularly for the general fund, that really starts to not just identify and size some of these issues, but really log them and make sure that we're tackling them and coming up with a resourcing plan for those things. Yeah, absolutely. The $2 million figure there is it's a blended figure that includes the blended rate impacts for all downtown office space. It's got the space optimization project in it that's related to the Portland Building project, and debt service for Fourth and Montgomery, which is a project that that council is directed to move forward. So to the degree that the forecast allows, these items would really need to be accommodated within the 1920 budget. Or accommodated in future years through reductions or additional resource. So, let's see. So we've got a bunch of other things that we know are out there. So while those were some of the specific commitments that we've made, this next list is a bit squishier. It represents things we know about but haven't yet fully committed to in the form of a funding plan. So this gets a little bit to what the mayor was talking about. It's really not comprehensive. It is really the intent is to start a discussion about what's on here and what's missing, and really figuring out what we want to start resourcing in 1920 and beyond. So Jessica's going to talk a little bit later about directives to develop. We discussed them a little bit in the last session. I just wanted to take a moment to make the concept a little bit more concrete. The previous slide really consists of items that we as staff kind of consider to have been directed. There have been explicit actions on the part of council that have really set those things in motion. This slide is more focused on those areas where we have heard interest or as staff have identified risks or issues, and where we're really looking for direction to develop specific decision points for council in the budget process. And as we develop, so that we can really develop that long-term financial plan and figure out what are we going to tackle in 1920, what are we going to tackle in future years. So when we look at this, the first of the four items on the left are commonly referred to as legacy or long-term liabilities. I think they're reasonably well understood. I won't go into them too deeply, but currently there is no comprehensive funding strategy to address them. We've taken a lot of small and large steps on all of them, and really taking a very entrepreneurial and opportunistic approach. But with council direction, my team would work with the CFO and the relevant bureaus to identify, size, and plan for some of these costs. And really tee up a series of decisions for council on how to resource those plans. The likely result would be additional constraints placed on operating bureaus in future years, either by claiming that first new dollar in or potentially driving reductions to the degree that we don't have those resources, or getting more entrepreneurial in terms of developing resources outside the general fund. So any questions or concerns on that?
Question about the Housing Bureau.
Yeah.
In out years, there is some degree of housing. I think only $3 million of the Housing Bureau is currently funded with the general fund. Mm-hmm. So the remainder is coming from other sources. That's one correct. Of those key other sources is tax increment financing.
That's correct.
We've talked a lot about Prosper Portland going off the TIF cliff. We have not talked a lot about the Housing Bureau following them off that cliff. Why is it not on the list?
You could certainly add it to the list. As I mentioned, this is not
a company. Shouldn't it be on the list?
I'm sorry?
Shouldn't it be on the list? If housing is one of our priorities, I believe the revenue structure is going to dry up, why isn't it on the list?
We can certainly add it to the list. I know that it's not currently on the list because what I've been trying to capture with this is those things that have been specifically raised by council in recent years. I think that it is something that the TIF cliff is something that that I know that we've been concerned with for quite some time, and work with PDC, now Prosper Portland, to work through their plan. So happy to work with the Housing Bureau. I know that they have a number of other resources as well, which wasn't so much the case for Prosper, but we would absolutely continue to work with them to address that.
I know Shannon's here somewhere, but I would like a deeper commentary on the status of the Housing Bureau, particularly with regard to tax increment financing.
Absolutely. So, Mr. Mayor, I know that the Chief Financial Officer, Jennifer Cooperman, is working hard with bureaus on their five-year plans. So I will make sure that Jennifer and Shannon work with our team in terms of giving you an update on that. People are aware of this issue, and we'll update you and the rest of the council.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So the next item at the bottom on the left there, permanent supportive housing, is something that we've heard quite a bit of discussion about as one of the key areas for addressing homelessness. And so really the question is, for 1920 and beyond, do we want to develop, size, and plan for any significant new investment there? As the rental registration program gets up and running, we've got an amount that's been identified by the Revenue Division as being necessary for collecting those fees. We've got a low confidence number, but it still hasn't been determined what the appropriate level of cost recovery would be for that program. So it is possible that it might be fully self-supporting in the future. Next up, we've got Portland Building Technology. The reconstruction project is intending to absorb the initial deployment of audiovisual, meeting room, print management, and signage technology. But as part of the fall bump, OMF has requested about $500,000 be added to General Fund Bureau at current appropriation level targets to fund the ongoing costs associated with this technology enhancement. So the question for council is this something that we want to provide additional resource to General Fund Bureau for, or ask bureaus to absorb it when those costs come online in 2021.
Those ongoing?
Yeah, the $500,000 would be ongoing costs that's associated with the maintenance and replacement reserves for those technology items. So. The next one is 311 integration. This is really in its early stages. We don't really have a good sense of what the costs are going to be or how they might be spread across participating bureaus, but really just wanted to get it on the radar as something that that council has signaled that we're looking to move forward. And really the last three items are related to labor costs. Both Bureau of Emergency Communications and the Portland Fire Bureau, Portland Fire and Rescue will be negotiating new contracts that will ultimately start on July 1. In addition to any potential costs that are associated with these agreements, we've also heard that BOIC might be looking to enhance staffing to achieve their performance targets. This might in turn drive facility needs as they expand, so that might be an additional cost. And the question that we're looking to answer is, are we looking for options in 1920 or beyond to scale up that emergency response?
Not on the list is pay equity. Should that be on the list?
Yes, absolutely, and that's something that we'll be discussing in the fall bump in the next couple of weeks. Yep. So finally, a few weeks ago, Council passed the new non-represented classification and compensation plan. This new class comp plan expands the ranges for non-represented staff. While the plan doesn't have specific costs associated with it, Council did express some desire to manage the near-term pressures related to the fact that there are so many employees that are currently paid at top of range and their potential growth. So that's an item that we've got out there. Before we move on to the next slide, just wanted to see if there are any questions or concerns, and as the mayor has already identified, are there any missing items? All right. So moving on to the one-time list, one thing I'll note that it is impossible to address all the issues that we've just listed with existing resources or near-term growth in the general fund. So we're really looking to be selective as about what we tackle. One of the big challenges moving forward will be developing a more robust financial plan, as I mentioned to the mayor earlier, that really identifies the full cost for these and other risks and issues, and really tees up for council funding solutions and trade-offs. So the next slide that we've got, it really talks about some of the one-time commitments. We talked briefly last week about the Mount Tabor agreement, so unless there are any questions on that, I'll move on. Next, the Anderson settlement is the amount remaining for reimbursing utilities for costs that were deemed inappropriately funded through rates.
How many more payments are due on the Mount Tabor?
This would be the last one that's required by the agreement.
Very good, thank you.
Full reimbursement of that $7 million is required by September 2019. I've got the full amount up here, but we do have $400,000 ongoing in the budget to finance a portion of this. So the ongoing remainder would be in the $3 to $4 million range. This is a possibility of fully funding it with one time and recapturing the $400,000 ongoing as part of the budget process. So I did want to put that out there. The amount that we've got for the joint office reflects a continued commitment for all non-capital one-time that was included in the 18-19 budget. Services include diversion, supportive housing, rapid rehousing, safety off the streets, and system support services. So the next one, in September, Council directed bureaus to enter into commitments related to the lent stabilization. Costs have yet to be determined, although there was about a $250,000 request in the special appropriations budget in the fall to support the management of that program. And so we're looking at that right now, and we'll provide a recommendation to Council shortly. Then those last two space-related items are the required cash contribution per city debt policy for those two projects. I'll note that the general fund component of those could be less depending on the tenancy, but we're just assuming general fund bureaus at this point. So any questions?
Just to be clear, Council, 4th and Montgomery, the name has changed a couple times. It used to be referred to as the Jasmine Block, just so people are clear about the project.
I'm sorry, I missed what you said about the Joint Office of Homeless Services. So up to $6.6 million, and that's the delta on one-time funding we need to continue where we are?
That's all the one-time funding for non-capital items. There was a capital component in this year's budget that brought it to seven and change. That was for shelter development. So we were assuming that it was the service component that was the ongoing need.
So if we want to maintain the level of funding of the joint office, we've got to come up to $6.6 million, but that's one time. So there's the second issue, which is how much of that do we want to convert to ongoing?
I think that is absolutely a question for Council.
Yeah. Okay.
So in addition, there's some other one-time items that we've heard about from Council or are otherwise out on the horizon. The first is an ADU pilot, accessory dwelling unit pilot, that's been requested in the fall bump. The goal of the program is really to accelerate ADU development with a focus on developing affordable units. So next we've got...
The Council hasn't weighed in on that yet.
I'm sorry, sir.
The Council hasn't weighed in on that.
No, absolutely not. I was just noting that it is... to the degree that we're trying to ventilate those priorities of all of Council, I'm trying to make sure that we're getting a complete list on the table. To the degree that there are things that are missing that are priorities, we definitely want to hear them, but I want to make sure that we've got those things that we've heard about out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I just wanted to add one point to that. It has come up over and over again in my first 2 years in this role that we need to do a better job as the staff to making sure that the Council understands, no matter what juncture in the year a funding commitment falls into, what its implications are for the budget process. And that's one of the intentions in this effort, is to make sure that no matter when you make a commitment, whether it's to 4th and Montgomery or a pilot, that you understand what it might be doing in terms of the entire process as a whole. So that's the intent of trying to put these things out early for you, yeah. Commissioner Fritz.
Yeah, thank you. So the next one, in June, Council passed a resolution that has a number of costs that we should be expecting, including some foregone tax revenue, a pool of resources for building owners to assess their structures with regard to unreinforced masonry, and also costs associated with technical assistance in terms of dealing with those buildings. Next up, as we prepare for the 2020 decennial census, Office of Community and Civic Life has asked for resources to do outreach, particularly for communities that are traditionally undercounted in the census. Southwest, and that's also something that you'll be seeing in the fall bump, and has additional components in out years. So you'll be seeing that in our reviews, and it'll be coming to Council on. We'll be discussing it in the work session on October 30th. Then we've got the Southwest Corridor Housing Strategy. That is expected to require up to $3 million to leverage additional funds for construction of housing in the Southwest Corridor. It's yet to be determined whether that's that's a general fund need or not, but I wanted to make sure that was on the list as well.
I think we should have the Outer Powell Division as well, because that, we know, needs more funding, and we don't know where it's coming from.
And by the way, you list this as other known one-time issues, but the presentation we had on Southwest Corridor Housing Strategy was that a new urban renewal district may be the key to unlocking the resources mm-hmm. we need to fund it. So It could be one-time funding, it could be urban renewal, it could be some combination.
Yes, absolutely. And that's really why it's on this slide and not on the previous slide regarding commitments, because it is still something that's in development and determining what the size of the general fund impact is. Let's see. The revenue division of OMF is ready to launch an RFP for a pretty big technology investment. It's an integrated tax system to replace our sort of homebrew legacy system. The costs at this point are very low confidence, so I don't have any numbers up here, but there are a number of options being explored for funding that work, including a possible benefit sharing agreement with the implementer. And finally, I've included the Special Appropriations Competitive Grants. This is something that most members of council have expressed a desire to continue, so I wanted to make sure that didn't get lost. So I'll stop for any questions, concerns, additions. Obviously, as we move through the process, we'll continue to sift through this list, add to it, cut from it, and figure out what we're going to get done in 1920 and beyond. So as you can see, we've got a lot on our plate, and so we're really looking to you for guidance to know where to focus staff effort and public resources in this process. So Jessica Kennard is going to talk a little bit more about directives to develop, and that's really one of the tools that we're hoping to use to sort of get there.
Before we go on to that, I wanted to follow up on the mayor's comment around trying to delineate the list by, you know, commitments that we have to fund no matter what. I was wondering about any other categories that might be helpful for council, because these seem to exist on a spectrum in terms of pre-development, you know, things that we have done as legacy work, work that may be able to be pushed out into out years. Would that be helpful for council if we took a kind of an organizational way to look at, here's the way you could be looking at this in terms of when these could be funded, how they could be funded? I feel like with that question, it just prompted me, we could do a little more detailed scenario work for you there. Would that be helpful? Not all these need to be staged in the same way. Some of them can be done differently. Commissioner Fritz, I can see you're ready.
I'm just challenged. I've had my new bureaus for 1 month. And so this whole discussion, I know there's multiple things that we need to do in the Office of Equity and Human Rights, but I don't know what to put on the table at this point. So I just want to put a placeholder that there are some huge, and I haven't heard from the other bureaus that I am not and have never been in charge of. So that's really challenging to me to say, is this the list?
I would welcome it. I've been here now, 10 years, and so we've been through enough of these processes where I think I've gotten to the point where I ask the right question sometimes. But having a multi-year view of when these costs may hit, and also a cheat sheet that gives us options in terms of funding, like with Southwest, we're looking at urban renewal, potentially other sources, potentially the housing bond, two housing bonds, then there's general fund. I think some recognition of the mix of funding that's in play is helpful. At the very least, Tom, the benefit of that is that it ensures that the council is comparing apples to apples. I mean, once you hand out that document, you may get some feedback, critical or otherwise. But I think it's very important that we're all operating under the same set of assumptions about this year's budget and the next couple of years. So I think that's the value. Mm-hmm. And the feedback you get from my colleagues and the feedback that causes you to shape it a little more is valuable. So if it doesn't require a lot of work, which I don't think it will, and it doesn't apply to every one of these, I think it's a good exercise.
Right. Yeah, no, I think personally. I think that's precisely where we're looking to head. I think it's one thing that we've been challenged with over the years is teeing up those questions in the current year for how we're going to address some of the out years. And how we're going to size and manage those issues and resource them. So I think that kind of sheet and those options would be really useful to start having those conversations earlier, rather than waiting for them to slide up into the current year when we need to deal with them more immediately. So we look forward to that. So now I'll hand it over to Jessica Kennard, who's going to talk a little bit more about the specifics on directives to develop.
Thanks. Good morning, Council. My name is Jessica Kennard. I'm the Interim Assistant Budget Director. I'm going to briefly walk you through the goals of the direct to develop process, as well as some of the technical details. And we'll also have time for some questions. One of the key changes to the budget process that's been discussed, as you know, is having the mayor and commissioners formally direct the development of investment proposals. This is in contrast to the current process where bureaus independently and individually develop packages and submit them for council consideration at the end of January with their requested budgets. So to start at a high level, the goals of this process, and it is a new process, so these are what the process hopes to achieve, is to increase predictability of the budget process by providing clear and early guidance to bureaus on where council priorities lie. And this is, again, a big reason why we're all here today, and we were here last week, is having this priority-setting conversation early. To maximize the value of bureau staff time by focusing staff and public engagement efforts on the thoughtful development of packages in the areas that they know council is prioritizing. So, as you know, in the existing process, hundreds of city staff and our public advisory bodies are spending countless hours developing several proposals, the vast majority of which are not accepted in the end. So the thinking here is that with this process, at the very least, bureau staff and their advisory bodies will know that they're spending time working on those areas that are of priority to council. So this is not to say that all directives will be eventually accepted or funded, but the likelihood that that work will be utilized and valuable in some way is much more high. Relatedly, this process should empower council to focus your time and your discussions on those areas that are of most importance to you. Next slide. Thank you. So what is the directive to develop? Essentially, it's a council signal for a desired service level outcome to one or more bureaus. What is meant by this is that council may direct bureaus to tell them, to tell you how to achieve a certain desired outcome, and then let our capable city staff and our capable advisory bodies determine what the widgets are to put together a proposal for you to how to achieve that outcome. So it's allowing leadership to essentially step back, tell folks what you'd like to see, and allow all of our capable civil servants to do the hard work that they have learned to do in putting together a proposal for you. This is not to say that directives to develop can't be something as specific as putting forward a position or directing a bureau to put forward a certain dollar value for outreach or another package, but the idea here is, again, to empower leadership to really talk about the outcomes and the achievements that you want to see, and seeing what bureaus put together in terms of their best foot forward. It'll also empower, you can direct more than one bureau to work on a package together, so we can start to get a little bit more at that cross city, cross bureau collaboration. These packages should be communicated in writing with the city budget office copied. CBO will keep track of the directives and work with bureaus to understand the package so we can perform an accurate analysis during our review period. We are also available to assist members of council and bureaus with clarifying the issues, articulating the desired outcomes, and or structuring the package. Understand, again, this is a change. This is a big change for council and for bureaus. So we're here to assist however we may in making sure that the process runs smoothly. And then to ensure that packages meet council's intended goals and priorities, they should be as specific as possible, but as we've heard from council, it's hard, particularly at this early stage, to be very specific. So we can do some further conversations around that. But at the high level, what the directive to develop should include is essentially the issue or problem that you would like to see addressed, the desired outcome of the package that you'd like to see, and then direction on how the package should be funded if desired. That's an option. It's not required. But you do have the option to direct bureaus to request new resources, to look for new revenue sources, and to Commissioner Fish's point, to investigate what other options there might be outside of the general fund to fund a certain priority. You may direct them to look into that. You may also direct them direct a reallocation, or you may direct new resources as well. Let's see. So next slide. Okay. So when are directives to develop issued? So first I should say that any member of council may issue a directive to develop, and it's essentially why we are having this conversation now. It's starting now, but it's throughout the budget process. So there's a lot of stuff that's changing right now. As Commissioner Fritz mentioned, several commissioners just have new bureaus. We have a new commissioner coming online in a few months. So we understand, and also during the budget development process, we understand there's a lot of new information that may come to light throughout bureau outreach and education. So the process is really starting now, and you can continue to work on developing your directives over the next couple of months. I will say that to really maximize the value of the quality of the packages, it helps for bureaus to have the directives as soon as possible, so that when they submit their requested budget, they have time to provide as comprehensive and thoughtful of a package as possible. But again, understanding that it's always that push and pull between limited time and the information that you all are trying to gather during budget season. Let's see. So. Finally, as a segue to Director Rees, next session on community engagement, these directives may be a helpful tool in improving our public engagement efforts during March and April, but I will let her talk about that a little more. And I imagine there are likely some questions, so I'd like to pause here and see if we can address any of those. Yes.
How does this work with the commission form of government? How, supposing I propose a directive for the police bureau, mm-hmm. which the mayor's police mm-hmm. commissioner says over my mm-hmm. dead body, how does that work?
So I think that
the short answer is there's a special file that gets put in.
Well, so one of the goals here, and what we want to do is we want to ensure that this new process is as flexible and open as possible, and you all are elected on a citywide basis. So we're trying to facilitate the ability for each commissioner to be able to have a role in overall city governance. The details in terms of how you get beyond one commissioner being essentially the director of bureau would be heavily reliant on conversations amongst commissioners, and so the hope too here would be that those conversations could happen, and commissioners could reach some sort of tentative agreement, so that again we know that the bureau is really working on a priority area that's not just a priority for one member of council, but potentially a priority for more than one member of council.
So again, you know, I'm newly in charge of the Office of Equity and Human Rights. There's a lot of stuff to figure out. Mm-hmm. One of my colleagues comes with something that is not currently on top of my to-do mm-hmm. list. I'm then supposed to figure out whether or not that should be top of my to-do list.
Mm-hmm. So the way that, and again, this process is not finalized yet, I should say. Right. So we are opening this up to council decision in terms of hammering out some of the details. But the way that it's currently structured is that you, Commissioner Fritz, or one of your colleagues may request a directive to develop. And if you decide that it's not a priority for you, that you don't want that priority to be funded, you as the commissioner in charge are actually the person that's signing off on that final requested budget. So that would be your opportunity as the commissioner in charge to say, no, thank you, I would rather you not put that forward.
Just seems the opposite of what we're trying to do in terms of making good use of staff time and volunteer time. So, you know, usually we get the presentations from the mm-hmm. bureaus. I find out the budget is the one time that I, as a commissioner, do have that citywide authority to look at what gets funded, mm-hmm. what doesn't, mm-hmm. and therefore what happens in bureaus and what doesn't,
yes.
with input from each of my colleagues.
Yes.
And usually we would have the presentations from the bureaus mm-hmm. to let us know, here's some hot issues you might not know about in Bureau X. Mm-hmm. And me thinking, oh my goodness, I thought that was taken care of years ago. Let's mm-hmm. absolutely work on that, mm-hmm. or else still not a priority.
Yeah.
So I just don't. And it's putting a lot of work on me as a commissioner to meet with the directors, to mm-hmm. Have multiple meetings with my colleagues, which isn't transparent behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
I just am not.
I'm
wondering about my workload.
Yes.
No, I completely appreciate that, and I think that when I issued the memo, outlining the initial draft of this approach, really highlighted the fact that ultimately this is council's process, and we really are working to we want to make sure that it is a process that that generates the outcomes that that you as a group are looking for. I think that we've I would say that we are trying to problem solve. solve for a certain set of issues. We may be creating other issues that you've identified. But one thing that I would say is, looking back on previous processes, and you've been a part of many, one thing that would be really helpful for us as we kind of dial this in a little bit is to understand how have we navigated those questions of bureaus outside of your portfolio, and I think you've highlighted a couple of those areas where you've looked to the sort of the surfacing and ventilation of a lot of the priorities that have come up through bureaus as being sort of your window into what might be an appropriate sort of place to put emphasis. So I think that we're going to need to keep working through this. So I'd love to keep working with your office on and other offices on exactly how we can navigate this particular issue, because it's ultimately a question that the form of government is one that we navigate every day in a lot of different ways, and this is really just going to present a challenge. But I think that given some of the problems that we're solving for on the other end, I think that that there are some real benefits, and so maybe we can figure out a way to really dial in this question of the tension between commissioner in charge versus citywide elected official. We recognize that is an ongoing challenge for all of you, and we want to help sort of get to a good process that sort of honors both those roles.
Claudio, go ahead, Commissioner Daly.
So thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for raising that issue. It hadn't even occurred to me that this meant that we could request directives to develop for bureaus that we're not in charge of, and I found that momentarily quite exciting. Yes, literally endless, yeah. But I can see how it would also be problematic. So, I'd want to hear all the brilliant ideas from my colleagues, but ultimately I think you would have to have the buy-in from the commissioner in charge for it to advance to
so how about we take it back and try and work on this specific problem, come up with some potential solutions, maybe bring them to your staffs to vet those and see if we can come up with a good answer.
I'm not rejecting the idea out of hand, and I think there are some bureaus and some issues that we are all held responsible for, regardless of who is the commissioner in charge, and we should be making collaborative decisions and working across bureaus. I'm just concerned that we could just have this deluge of directives coming from not the commissioners in charge, and it could get a little out of hand.
I think that's absolutely right.
It also sounds kind of fun, to be honest. But
when Tom and I have talked about what does success look like for this process.
So Claudio, let me give some. First of all, thank you for the effort here, because I see what you're trying to get at writ large, and this is really you trying to operationalize what I put on the table last time we met, which was how do we get earlier engagement. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that we already have a process where at least the mayor through the proposed budget can do things that the commissioner in charge doesn't approve of, one way or the other. And what I'm trying to also do is get the buy-in as early as possible. I mean, it's not always possible to get complete buy-in, but as much understanding in terms of what my colleagues think are their top priorities as much as they can do so by the time that the proposed budget has to be issued. I'd rather it not be a big surprise, right? Mm-hmm. So that requires a lot of lead work. I concur with Commissioner Udaly that, and I think Commissioner Fritz intimated this as well, I don't think given this form of government you can really cram it down the throat of a commissioner in charge against their will. I don't think that's a practical solution. But what we're also trying to overcome is last year we had so many proposed ad packages. And what Jessica said rings true to me. We had staff working really, really hard to propose. I forget how many proposed ad
packages.
Well
over 100, yeah.
Well over 100 ad packages. And how many did we... give or take, how many do you think we actually funded?
Oh, I wouldn't want to guess, but I would expect it was probably 20 to 30.
Okay, so maybe a third-ish, you know, a fifth to a third actually get funded. And I'm not sure that's a great use of staff time. So maybe there's a way to reduce that number, be mindful of the fact that our staffs are working really hard. This is also a pivotal year in that we're moving to a different strategy around budgeting altogether with the program offers. So we're all going to be busy and we're all going to be heads down. But I'm just simply stating a preference. I would really like to have as much input from my colleagues as early as possible in this process. I'm a little put off by the word directives. I think that sounds a little formal.
Direction?
Direction. Or at least just, I want to make sure I come out of this process, not necessarily today, but in the not distant future, because we're already in the early stages of formulating the proposed budget. People may not realize that. We're already doing the lead work with bureaus. It would be helpful to know more rather than less. And I see that that's what you're trying to get at. Mm. So maybe if you could go back and work on a couple of scenarios, that would be helpful.
I think that works, and we can get something to you.
And before we move on to Sukh, I just want to mention a couple things. One is I still have concerns about how the budget redesign is going to impact small bureaus, and especially those that are developing capacity in order to accomplish or fulfill council-directed actions. In particular, I'm talking about civic life and OEHR. And then the other question I have, I still, one of my frustrations with the budget process thus far is that it wasn't really inspiring bureaus or commissioners to really dig in and find the inefficiencies and redundancies. And I don't quite see how this redesign is going to allow us to do that.
Do you want to talk to Madonna?
Sure. Because directives are another name for ad packages. We're still talking about ad packages. So, I have a remaining concern.
Commissioner Dealey, I have a story that may help.
Okay.
There is a lot of inspiration to do the work of building the budget differently in the bureaus, and I'll use the OMF family of bureaus as an example. I sat at this table last year and answered Rob's question, the community budget advisor, around, we just didn't get to the point early enough to do the OMF budget as one budget. We are doing that this year.
Great.
So with the program offer model, we are challenging our people around, present your program with your performance outcomes, you'll have your constraint, your Cal minus one, show us exactly how you'll deliver the performance with that money, and we will make choices across the bureaus around the priorities that council gives us, instead of bureau by bureau kind of thinning the soup. So that is a change that I think is very positive. I know similar activities are happening in other bureaus. So we will continue to do a better job telling council about the changes already underway, because I think you identified that we just haven't really told that story about what's happening day to day in the bureaus. I also want to make a point, if that answered your question, on directives to develop. I'm really glad Commissioner Fritz asked the question, because it's been debated by staff around how do we do this in the best way for council and Portlanders. And I want to raise one example that I think is instructive. We know there will be lots of ongoing interest in the Housing Bureau. As a city, we've asked the Housing Bureau to do a lot of new business lines over the last few years in terms of the capacity that the Housing Bureau has to deliver and fulfill its existing commitments on the bond and other programs. We would hope that in the directives to develop process, interested commissioners would talk to the commissioner in charge and Director Callahan about should staff actually invest time in developing this directive or direction because of that unique case of that bureau. So we are hoping the process also expands the collegiality and the understanding across the citywide electeds of what's happening in each bureau, particularly on the top priorities. We have tended in the past to not do as good a job as we should do as staff educating all the council around the management issues within these bureaus that are facing significant pressures as Portland grows, like the Housing Bureau. So to give you a flavor of our debate, we talked about that around should, if Commissioner Daly has a directive for the Housing Bureau, should the mayor sign off? Should they talk? Should there be a... We don't have an easy answer on that. So I think STEP is the correct one, that CBO come up with some options for you.
But Tom, we already have a culture that gives us some guidance in this. So for example, it is extremely rare for a commissioner to come to council and offer an amendment without knowing they have a second. And conversely, it's embarrassing not to have a second because there's that deadly quiet that occurs and nothing goes forward. So our entire system is predicated on the idea that we're spending time with our colleagues having these conversations. And I would not look favorably on any directive proposed by a colleague who was not the commissioner in charge, that had not been discussed with the commissioner in charge, that did not have some broad support, and that was not consistent with something that the council had identified as a core priority. That's just my filter. But I think we're all capable of making the same kinds of judgments. And I don't think we should create a system where we're doing end runs around commissioners. I think we should have a system that encourages more collaboration.
So I'll be asking for weekly meetings with everybody. I mean, seriously, this is a lot of work starting at the top and not engaging the public. So maybe we should get to the public input part of it, because I'm very concerned that it gets overly baked before community members even have a chance to weigh in.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions before we go to Director Ree?
And I just want to say thank you for all of your input on this particular aspect of the process. As Tom mentioned, it has been something that we've discussed a lot at the staff level, and ultimately hearing from council on the way that you want to handle this particular issue is really important for us to move this forward. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Good morning again. Zook Ree, Office of Community and Civic Life. Is that about right? All righty. Now let's get this over here. Good morning. The first slide says concepts worth repeating, and I'm going to use these concepts to frame my remarks to share with you this morning. Many of the things you've highlighted today really point to a multi-year iterative process, not incremental per se, but definitely these ideas take multiple iterations to become successful and useful. Today, I'll spend a little bit of time about some of the focused design improvements for community engagement in the spring, but you'll see that most of my slides are about what we need to do in a longer period of time to truly affect this change. I also want to remind council that the community engagement process actually has several different end users in mind. Council might be the most important because you're the final decision makers, but bureaus and also communities need other supports and other tools so that they could be full participants. What you're fundamentally doing is actually a leadership proposition. You're changing the conversation. So I just want to take a moment to thank you for insisting that we do that. Your comments, which sometimes maybe we are not able to deliver the right answer as quickly as we'd like to you, your comments and your insistence that we change this process and change the conversation is very welcome, because this is long overdue. The next slide is about changing the conversation. So, are we engaging the community on the right questions? Mayor Wheeler actually spoke to this in his remarks last week, and I'm going to repeat them. I took him down verbatim, and they're worth repeating. He said, we need a citywide discussion about our core obligations as a city government and city council priorities, and to be realistic with the public about the city's scope of control, what we're capable of doing, and our obligations to the public on an ongoing basis. Commissioner Udaly also spoke to the need for an honest accounting of what we want and what we need for everyone. And inherent in such a reckoning is leading with equity. And equity requires an unflinching assessment of how we got here, as well as a non-negotiable focus on outcomes. And so these questions, whether around housing, infrastructure, or livability, is actually a different set of questions we've been engaging the